did, and it didn't fill this at all. Now, you remember the first beast arose out of the sea, and the sea would be symbolic of the great mass of non-Israel people in general. Out of them, you see, rose the empires of Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, the Asian peoples out to the far fringe of the white race, as well as Rome in Europe. But now this second beast with the two horns like a lamb, this arose not out of the sea, but out of the earth. So it means that it is basically a European origin. In other words, you will find this arising in the territory of the northern and western Roman Empire. Well, what are we finding, developing out of this territory that it symbolically calls the earth? The tyrannical organization developing out of that is obviously the United Nations. Now, it's an image of the first beast. They haven't given it its full power yet. But the ideal of the thing, held up by all who favor it, is a worldwide tyranny able to rule all nations and crush with great force any attempted opposition. So, obviously, this is an image, a copy of the ancient empires that ruled on just that basis. Brutal force to compel complete conformance. The first beast was a symbolic of concentrated worldwide power. Each of the heads or empires ruled substantially all the world that it knew. So, we're seeing the copy, the image of that prepared. Now, this second beast, that while pretending to be a lamb with the two horns, spoke as a dragon, it said, saying to them that dwell on the earth, they should make an image to the first beast. Well, now you're getting all this propaganda from so many sources today to brainwash us into believing that only one worldwide supreme government with limitless power can produce peace. You see that written in all sorts of newspaper and magazine articles. Your politicians are telling you the same thing. You're getting it from many sources in Washington. Senator Fulbright, who's desperately afraid that he won't get the Oak Leaf Cluster for his Order of the Red Banner unless he succeeds in bringing us to total defeat in Vietnam, he's giving you the same idea. You note that in the 1945 conference at San Francisco, where the United Nations was brought into being, a multitude of small nations were allowed to be there and say yes when they were told to. It was dominated, of course, by the great powers, which are today in complete control of the European continent. Now, it said that this image of the beast speaks. It does. The various resolutions and so-called conventions, treaties of the United Nations. But you notice that it rarely speaks for good, nearly always for evil. And when it does speak anything that is faintly good, it is ignored and nothing comes of it. They should have remembered Isaiah chapter 8, verses 9 and 10. associate yourselves, O ye people, and ye shall be broken in pieces. And give ear, all ye of far countries. Gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. Gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. Take counsel together, and it shall come to naught. Speak the word, and it shall not stand. Isn't that a perfect thumbnail sketch of the United Nations down to date? Totally helpless for any good, but powerful enough for a great deal of evil. It said the image of the beast also causes that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Well, in Africa, the only civilized portion of the so-called nation of the Congo, Katanga, tried to break away from cannibal savage domination and maintain a certain degree of civilization. And you remember, the United Nations forbade it. And it was United Nations troops that put down the revolt in Katanga. Now, even though they were furnished largely from a somewhat civilized nation, Sweden, they were guilty, the Swede Air Force pilots were guilty of shameful atrocities that would, they'd make an Apache Indian blush. Repeatedly, they bombed and strafed well-marked hospitals. They bombed residential portions of cities where there was no possible military target, but just simply to terrorize the people by brutal bloodshed until they would lose their will to resist. Again, you notice the United Nations backed Nigeria against Biafra. All the United Nations refused to send food to the starving Biafrans during that whole period. And even today, the only food that's getting to the Biafrans is that that's being brought in by a private organization, the Red Cross. The rest of them, like the United States, turn over all food and trucks and supplies to the Nigerian government, and it is not going to the Biafrans. So those who wouldn't worship the image of the beast are caused to be murdered. And if they ever get us to disarm and turn what weapons we have over to the UN, we'll be treated with equally bestial brutality. Then it goes on with another thing here, that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Everyone had to receive a mark either in his forehead or in his right hand. Well, it's been pointed out that it was customary back in John's time to brand slaves, either on the forehead or the right hand. Also, it's been pointed out that this might well be symbolic. The mark on the forehead, the seat of intellectual achievement, that all mental products would have to be subject to their rule, and on the right hand, all material products likewise would be governed thereby. So, without the mark of the beast, you couldn't either buy or sell. Now, the people who want to blame everything on the Catholic Church have said, well, you see, there were times when the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages used the power of the interdict. If a particular village had some Protestants among it, they would put the whole village under the interdict. No Catholic could have any dealings with them whatsoever. They couldn't, of course, be married in the church. They couldn't be buried in a church cemetery. Yeah. But even more than that, No Catholic could buy any of their products they had for sale. No Catholic could sell to them anything that they needed. But this was on a little dime store scale. It was used but very few times and insignificantly small where it was that way. And this has permanently ended. But as an example of this in the present day, you notice the United Nations has already gotten all the nations except South Africa and Portugal to boycott Rhodesia. And that's only a first step. They're trying, of course, to get American military forces to make war against Rhodesia and South Africa. I don't know whether Tricky Dicky will fall that low. Judas Iscariot himself wouldn't, but then that degree of restraint may not always be expected these days. Now, the way it's going to be brought home to us on a much greater scale is beginning to show up. Our own government has already sold out, and I use the term advisedly, sold out our entire money system to the Jews in the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank. You have no government money of a denomination larger than 50 cents. Beginning with the dollar bill and all up, and you don't have any silver dollars anymore in your note, all the rest of it is Federal Reserve notes. How many of you heard Richard Cotton a few weeks ago when he broadcast that fable of the Temple of the 13 Sons? It was excellent, and it was entirely a correct analysis. Might be well to write to him and get a copy of that. Incidentally, he needs some support. He's in pretty desperate straits financially to be able to stay on the air. Our whole economic system is being brought to the point of complete collapse now by the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, we are told this is being done to prevent inflation, which is a deliberate lie, told knowingly as a lie by 99 and 99 hundredths percent of the officials who say it, because they know better. They describe an imaginary situation that hasn't existed in the past century. They say, now, the whole trouble that brings inflation is that there is more money in circulation than there is goods to be bought with it. And so that causes inflation. Well, now, in times of great scarcity, more or less approaching famine, where you don't have enough products to go around, it's very true that if somebody has to go without, the man with money enough to bid high says, well, I'm going to get it anyway. I'll get my share. But that situation doesn't exist. There is no shortage of anything that the American people want. You can't show me one major industry in this country which is running, well, go back a year before they started bringing this catastrophe on us, when employment was a little bit higher. But even then, you can't show me one major industry which is running close to 80% of its present-day productive capacity. And they're not producing more because they can't market it, because they can't find people with money enough to buy the diminished output that they're putting out. There is no shortage of goods. There is no surplus of money. Now, when no such thing existed at all, when the trouble was not too little goods and too much money, but the other way around, then they shut off credit. Now, of course, no economy should be running on credit anyway. It should be running on money. I studied economics in college from a textbook written by Taussig, who was a pretty reputable economist. And he states the quantity theory of money this way, that there should be enough money in circulation to permit the purchase of all property, real or personal, that can be bought and sold. In other words, if you're an automobile dealer, for every automobile in your stock, there should someplace or other be money enough to buy it. Likewise, there should be money enough to buy your home if you want to sell it. A man I know, getting into financial difficulties, offered his home for sale for $30,000. It's in a little town some miles out of Los Angeles. It is valuable property. Price was very reasonable. And he found a buyer. Now, $30,000, he was willing to take $10,000 down. Buyer ready, but the buyer couldn't find a bank that had that much money to lend. He went to the Bank of America in that town. They said the property is well worth it. We aren't worried about it not being sufficient security, but we don't have the money. And they contacted a number of other branches of the Bank of America to see if they could get money from them. They couldn't. Now, further shutting off credit is obviously not the remedy for that sort of situation. This is done knowingly and deliberately for the purpose of bringing on disaster, just like the 1929 crash, which was brought on in the same way for the same purpose. After ruining everybody, the vultures were able to pick up whatever was worthwhile out of the wreckage for a song. They got it by foreclosure. Today, the total amount of money in circulation, including even the funny money of the Federal Reserve Bank, doesn't remotely approach 5%. I would say probably not 3% of the value it should have under the accepted quantity theory of money. They say our gross national product per year is approaching the $1 trillion mark now, and the total money in circulation wouldn't come anywhere near 10% of 1 year's production. Not to say anything about the permanent assets, the houses, the factories, the mines, the farms. Now, without money, what can you buy? What can you sell? You've already seen published now and then the first trial balloons put up to see if they can get people to accept the idea that we must have a United Nations world currency. Naturally, it hasn't gone over very well because nobody wants United Nations funny money if we can have American money with any value. So they've got to bring upon us total ruin, which they are deliberately trying to bring upon us in order to get us to accept that idea. Well, the UN world money, I'm told, has already been printed and is in storage. Now, how does it get out? The United Nations, of course, will issue it and the United Nations will determine how much money is issued to any one particular nation. Remember now, in the United Nations, we will be outvoted something over 130-1. Just the cannibals of Africa alone outvote us 25-1. And of course, the Jews will get the united support of all these beast nations by promising them that under Jewish leadership, they can steal all our wealth. So, under the fiction, this is done now to cut down inflation. We will be issued barely enough money for the people of the United States to have a bare subsistence on a coolie labor standard. We will not have money enough to buy our own products. You may work in a Detroit automobile factory or as a mechanic in a garage, but you won't be able to buy an automobile. You may work in a factory making refrigerators, but you won't have money enough to buy a refrigerator for your family. If you get just enough to eat, and they'll make sure it's not a surplus, you'll be very lucky. What happens to the rest of the money? Oh, that's issued in vast quantities to the people of Russia, China, India, and Africa. Every Congolese chief will have money enough for a Cadillac and a few things like that. And are these nations going to support that sort of rule in the UN? You bet they are. Well, with no money in existence, remember now, you're a criminal that can be sent to a federal penitentiary if you've got any gold money. It only requires the mere issuing of an edict to put you in the same situation if you've got any silver money. You probably haven't. You've got these copper sandwiches with a thin skin of nickel on top and bottom. The only honest money we have is the penny, because that's at least solid bronze all the way through. So the only money available will be the UN money. If you still have some of the by then repudiated Federal Reserve notes, who's going to take them? You won't be able to go to a bank and trade a Federal Reserve note for another Federal Reserve note, which is all you can get for it now. You remember your paper money used to have the statement on it, redeemable in gold, or as the case may be, redeemable in silver dollars at the U.S. Treasury upon demand. Some of you, no doubt, save trading stamps. You're told you can redeem them for various things. Suppose you went to the trading stamp office with 10 books of trading stamps, and they said, well, the only thing we can give you in exchange for these are more trading stamps. Would you consider that redemption? But you go to any bank, including the Federal Reserve Bank itself, with some of their funny money Federal Reserve notes, and all they'll give you in exchange for it is more Federal Reserve notes. You can see we're only one short step away from the point where our whole money system will be brought down in wreckage, and we will have the United Nations world currency. That is, if you behave. Now, it'll be a socialist thing, and you notice that wherever there has been socialism, the first step in socialism is always to start rationing something or other. That is the only reason for the existence of socialism. It is its major purpose. If there was such a surplus of wheat that the daily ration per person was 3,500 loaves a day per person, they would still put you on a ration. The point being that if you are not politically reliable when this month's ration card expires, how are you going to get next month's ration card? There is some talk of trying to do away with money and substitute a mere bookkeeping operation through a sort of credit card in which a very elaborate system would have to be set up so that whether you wanted to buy 10 gallons of gasoline or $8 worth of groceries or whatever it is, that they would be able to telephone a central computer office which would tell them whether you had that much credit in your account. Whether they do it the one way or the other, the result is going to be the same. You can't buy and you can't sell unless this mark of the beast or the number is there. You remember all the hullabaloo they put out about the adoption of the postal zip code. That was going to make it possible now to expedite the mail because, you see, they just dumped the letter into an electronic machine which would read the zip code and send it right off to the proper branch post office. None of them believed that. The only way you can get any of this electronic scanning is to have the thing laid out with perfect precision, because your machine is only set to scan a certain particular place. Now, on your bank checks, you probably will find that in magnetic ink there are certain figures there which are magnetically scanned by a machine so that it posts the operation to the right account. But if by some error in printing those numbers happen to be a 16th of an inch to the right or left, it wouldn't work. Now, you take envelopes addressed by hand, some in tiny little precise writing and others in great sprawling letters that spill all over, and the zip code, not in magnetic ink, but in nearly illegible handwriting, in places that probably vary anywhere within a 2-inch square. No human science today is capable of making a machine that can read that zip code. And they never thought they could. It was simply a lie to get it swallowed. Now, what they want it for, it's going to be part of your computer record so that they make sure when they refuse to issue next month's ration card that they are withholding the correct ration card. Now, most names are common enough that there will be some duplication. If not in the same town, at least here and there over the United States. You take the common names like Smith and Jones. Open your telephone directory and see how many John Smiths there are, or see how many William Joneses there are. Now, so they will know which particular John Smith or William Jones this is, the zip code is a handy way of making sure that it's the John Smith who resides in a certain district in Alhambra rather than the John Smith who resides in Santa Monica. That's the only purpose it is capable of serving. Of course, your Social Security number would serve the same purpose, but a lot of people do not have a social security number and probably never will. Well, as part of the steps to force us into this kind of slavery, note some of the steps our own government's already taken. Public Law number 774 of the 81st, 82nd Congress, entitled the Defense Production Act of 1950. Public Law 920 of the 81st, 82nd Congress, entitled the Federal Civil Defense Act of 1950. These provide for a degree of tyranny which would make any Oriental monarchy look like the extreme of liberty, a degree of tyranny heretofore totally unknown in human history. The Civil Defense, as they call it, Master Plan Manual of October 1958. See, a good deal of this was issued under our President Eisenhower. This manual has 42 annexes and supplements, or had at least that many when I wrote this down. It contains the plan for a total government takeover of all labor and property. A Civil Defense Office booklet of December 1958 frankly states, the extent to which control of the economy will have to be exercised will go far beyond any previous emergency. And it states some of them. There will be a total control of money matters, particularly actions to reestablish a dependable medium of exchange and a credit structure. Now, if this was a defense production thing, if defense was any part of this, why would you have to abandon our money system and set up a new one because the Russians bombed a few of our cities? It couldn't serve any purpose. It couldn't help defense in any way. In fact, it would make defense nearly impossible by making such a state of confusion that nothing would follow. This is never intended, in spite of the lying title, this was never intended for use as a defense measure in time of war. It was intended for use as a measure of tyranny in time of peace. It says there will be complete control of production, complete control of the distribution of goods and services, and complete control over consumption of goods and services. In other words, the government will decide just how many suits of clothes you can get in a year, just how much food your family can get per month, and so on. And all this tyranny comes into effect not upon a military attack, not upon outbreak of attempted revolution, but it says it shall come into effect whenever the president shall proclaim an emergency, which is whenever Kissinger commands him to. Kissinger is not Tricky Dicky's advisor, he's his master. In President Kennedy's first 2 years, he issued over 60 executive orders specifying powers and regulations of this bureaucracy. President Johnson added a great many more. I don't have the number of them. And presumably Tricky Dicky has added some more since then. One of the interesting things that came to light was when a congressman produced and read into the congressional record an official FBI memorandum which spoke of, quote, the necessity of brainwashing the citizenry. The FBI's activities against the mafia are merely to suppress competition, that's all. The FBI today is a minor branch of the, what is it, KGO, I guess it's...
KGB,
yeah, of Moscow. For the past 30 years, the FBI has known the exact address of every major communist arms dump in the United States. And they have taken the most extreme pains to avoid embarrassing the communists by picking up any of their illegal machine gun weapons. The only people they harass are patriotic American citizens who plan not to surrender to a communist takeover. So, you can see what the mark of the beast is developing into, and exactly how it will come about, that no man can buy what he needs to eat, nor sell whatever his own product may be, unless he has the mark of the beast, the name of the beast, or the number. Now, this was a long way in the future when John wrote this, A.D. 94. But we aren't going to have long to wait for this.